Hey everyone, and welcome to The Kodakery. I'm Megan.
And I'm Josh.
Our guest this week is the Honorable Jeff Bridges. What you might not know about Jeff is that aside from being a great actor, he's also a photographer. Jeff talks with us about his photography work, using a wide-lux camera on all of his film sets, and why he prefers to use this format for his work. So, let's jump into The Kodakery and talk with Jeff.
Hey everybody, welcome to The Kodakery. Today in The Kodakery, Megan and I are honored to have with us a legend, Oscar winner, photographer, and all-round creative dude, Jeff Bridges. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Good to be here.
So there's so many things that Megan and I could talk to you about. You've made so many incredible films. There's so many places we could start, but we want to jump in and really start with your photography. For all of our audience out there, if you don't know, Jeff Bridges is an amazing photographer. He's taken set photos starting in 1984 with Starman all the way up through until most recent pictures. So where did this start for you? Why did you start documenting set life?
Well, I guess it started, set life. I mean, maybe let's start with the beginning of my photography. That was in high school, you know. And I borrowed and... my father's Nikon camera, and started taking pictures of my friends and different things, and I set up a dark room in my bathroom and all that kind of, you know, developing and printing my own stuff, and went along like that, and then I kind of, you're asking these questions, you're kind of rekindling my memory here. I haven't for a while, but I met this girl, Sue Geston, in Montana, and we eventually got married. We've been married now for 40 years, and we first lived together in my bachelor pad up in the hills of Malibu, and I taught her how to take pictures, and we built a darkroom for her, and she became a professional photographer. Took some wonderful photographs. Sue, when we got married as a wedding gift, she gave me a wide-lux camera. And I don't know if you folks are familiar with a wide-lux camera, but for those who aren't, it's a panning still camera. In other words, the lens, it pans. It's a 28-millimeter lens, and you almost get 180 degrees. Not quite. I don't know the official.
It's 140.
140, okay. it's just a wonderful camera. I always thought of it as sort of a bridge between motion pictures and still photography because of that moving lens, and you get some really unique images because of that moving lens. And it's not simply... a wide angle, I haven't seen any of that digital stitching that so many people do to make kind of a very wide shot. You know, you probably do a 360 degree stitch shot, mm-hmm. but still you can't get the effects that the wide lux gives you. I can go on and on about that, but I don't want to stream on too long. with your questions, but
like Josh was saying, you used your wide lux on set to kind of show behind the scenes stuff, but when you first started taking those pictures, what were you doing it for? Just for fun? I mean, it ended up turning into this, you know, a kind of a whole project, but how did it start?
Let me think about that. I love the images that I was able to get with the wide lux. I have one of my heroes is Jacques Lartigue, a wonderful photographer. You know, I think around the turn of the century, and he used a camera a bit like a wide lux, I think. And I loved his. There's a certain capriciousness to it because. It's not a through the lens viewfinder. It's just a viewfinder. You don't know exactly what you're getting. You usually get a little bit more. So the framing is well, like I said, kind of capricious. You know, it's got sort of has a life of its own, and I'm always surprised when I get stuff back what has been included or not included. You know, and it's a wonderful camera for several reasons. I mean, it's almost more how the eye sees in a traditional camera. It's almost got peripheral vision, you feel. You know, when your eye can look around in the photograph and see different worlds all in one photograph. You can hand hold pretty successfully at 15th of a second, which, you know, most cameras, unless you're steady as a rock, will give you kind of a blurred image. But because of the shutter mechanism, which is a thin slit that wipes across the film as the lens pans, it's more forgiving than a traditional shutter, and so you can hand hold it 15th of a second, and that comes in very handy for me because, like you said, most of my photography happens on the set, and in movie sets, the amount of light is become less and less as the years go on, you know, and the film is faster and more sensitive. And so my main setting, I usually shoot with 3200 ASA film that sometimes I'll push to 64. Mm-hmm. No focus on the camera, so you have to just focus with depth of field. And since I don't use it as a landscape camera, really, I like to get as close to my subjects as I can. So my settings are 15th of a second at f11, and that allows me to get about, you know, 2.5 feet or so from my subject and still get a relatively sharp image at 15th of a second.
With the subject matter of the photos, like one of the things that Megan and I were going through your website, we were looking through so many photos, and I love how, like, honest and of a look it is at the filmmaking process and the people on set, both like makeup and hair, but also your fellow co-stars. Like, so much of what we see now is a very curated, I don't want to say manufactured, but a curated version of what's happening, you know, through social media, through behind the scenes videos on DVDs, that kind of stuff. And this just feels so like you're capturing the people behind the parts and almost showing the transformation of the actors. Is that part of your goal? Like, why does the subject matter keep bringing you back? Like, why do you keep documenting that life?
Well, you know, everything is changing so fast these days. One of my goals of taking these pictures is to just kind of document what making movies at this part of, you know, the century looks like, you know. And, you know, I don't know how long we'll have these big cameras. I don't think they're building Panavision cameras anymore. And so I wanted to document what filmmaking looks like these days, and also from a perspective that is, you know, fairly unique. Somebody who's right in the center of the hurricane, you know, or the tornado, you know, from my unique perspective. You know, you mentioned that website. I have a few. You know, I make these little books for the cast and crew on most movies, and I have them on my website there. While we're talking on this in this interview, it might help the listeners to go to jeffbridges.com, and on the menu you'll see photography, and click on that and scroll down, and you can see some of these photographs that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. And you've got this series of them that you can only do with this Wide-Lux camera where somebody starts with a smile face.
Oh, yeah.
Runs over. How do you pronounce those words that you...
Didea, comedia. You know, it's supposed to be the masks, you know, the Greek
yes.
Okay. Of tragedy and comedy.
Yep.
And I have a series of actors doing that mask, and that's another very fun thing.
Oh, yeah, we love that, yeah.
When you shoot it 15th of a second, the lens takes about this long to move from the left to the right. So you have that much time to move the camera around, you know, and when you, of course, when you hold it still, that image will be pretty much in focus, and when your camera's moving, of course, you get blurs. So on these tragedy and comedy photographs, It's something I've got to rehearse with the person a bit. You know, I cock the camera and it goes all the way to the left, and then I have them frown and look to their left, and I put them on the far left side of the frame, and then when I say shift, they shift very quickly to a face of sorrow and put their eyes over to the right, and as they do that, I shift the camera, and then the lens captures them, you know, on the right side of the negative. So it's like you see, you know, people doing, you know, their happiness and their sadness all in one.
Yeah, I love that. Also, all of your photos are in black and white. Is there a reason for that?
Well, that probably comes from when I was first involved with photography in my darkroom. I didn't develop color. That's a whole other process. And I'm most familiar with, I think, black and white photography. And I really like black and white photography, not only still photography, but in film. Mm. Black and white, you know, it allows the viewer to you know, put all the colors and other things in their mind, you know, color it all in. But something about, you know, I'm thinking I made one of my favorite movies that I've been involved in, and one of the first ones that had, you know, quite a bit of success was The Last Picture Show. That was in black and white, and every time I see that, I really love the black and whiteness of it. You know, I think of the great Kubrick movies, you know, Dr. Strangelove, all those great, you know, black and white, and those rich blacks. There's just something about them, man. What do you think?
We agree. I mean, yeah. I love how they're in black and white.
And it makes it all feel really, like, timeless, like a lot of the images.
There you go. That's right. That's the point.
Yeah.
What do you think about the archival permanence of a photograph? Having an actual artifact, like a physical thing, instead of a digital file, we're talking about?
Oh, yeah, film, yeah.
You had just mentioned, as an example, like you shot a film on film. One of the things, we're here in Rochester, New York, the Film Factory, where they still make motion picture film, is just down the road from us. As an actor, you're on the set shooting film versus shooting digital. Going back and looking at these, some of the stuff that you have now, is there a difference for you between analog and digital, like celluloid and digital, or is it all just a medium and you're happy to be involved in anyway?
You know, in making movies, there's pluses and minuses to each of those, to the, you know, using film and digital. You know, digital isn't quite as precious, you know, or you can let the camera, you know, rip. It can be rolling, you know, for a long time. You don't have to worry about reloading and that sort of thing as often. So that's, you know, that adds a different sort of environment when you're making movies. But the look, I think, you know, most cinematographers, I think, well, I don't know. I was going to say that most cinematographers feel that the digital hasn't achieved the, you know, quite the quality of film. You can't get that same kind of effect that you can on film in digital. You know, digital is just, you know, what is it, ones and zeros kind of things, you know. It's,
right.
Get that... That creative artistic lure, or the, you know, that film can give you. And as far as I wish you know, you started to ask that question, and I work on it a little bit more. That, you know, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we always talk about the archival properties of film as a medium, and the fact that.
Well, stop right there now. Unpack that phrase.
Okay, it's tangible, like you can have a negative of the picture that you took, or an actual physical, you know, like one of the pictures that you took with your wide lux. You can hold it in your hand. And we often talk about how, you know, I've got a hard drive from when I was in college on a computer that doesn't work anymore that has pictures from that time period, and I'm never going to get them again. But when you have film and you have permanence, you know, there's just something to it.
Yeah,
having that physical thing.
Well, you can make a print out of a negative, and you can make a print out of a digital scan, mm-hmm. and then you have a print, and that's a physical thing.
True.
But you get back to the you know, what, as you were talking, it makes me think about movies as well. You know, when the cam came in, what's the other, the digital editing came in, you got rid of the old editing bays, what were they called, moviolas? No, is it moviola, is that what it was? I can't think of the term.
Yeah.
But, you know, you used to edit film, and it was a kind of a laborious task. You know, you had to be very careful of the, you know, handling the film, and it took a lot of time to figure out how you were going to cut. And then digital editing came in, and right around the same time as MTV, I remember, and you had all these very fast cuts.
Mm-hmm.
That became kind of a popular way to see movies. I know I made a movie called Heaven's Gate that came out around that time, and that film had a tough time, I think, because the context in which it was being viewed was in this time when people were very used to all these fast cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a film where the director, Michael Cimino, wanted a more, a slower pace, one that you could, you know, kind of study as a viewer in a different way than the fast cutting. And so it's and then the same thing with digital still photography. Now, you know, and you've got like 100 pictures, mm-hmm. you know, and God help you, now you got to go in there and look at all those things and pick the best one. But in a way, it becomes, less about, as a photographer, clicking that trigger just at the time, you know, how important that is, you know.
Yeah.
You know, now that some of that importance is gone, because you can just hold your finger down and, you know, right. take a bunch of pics. But I find, and it's funny, just culturally, I find that there's so much damn content now in everything.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I find frustrating and kind of something's not enjoyable about that. But I'm, as I even say those words, I feel like my parents complain.
No, we say it too.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know,
too,
you're not alone.
Too much going on, you know.
Yeah.
I find it hard enough just to edit my stuff. I can't imagine if I shot digital. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's something we hear from photographers that are just like there's a whole generation of like 20-somethings that are like re-embracing film, and part of it is exactly what you just said. They're like, we want to slow down and rediscover the craft of photography. It's not just about like pushing the button and capturing 1,000 images. It's about the composition and the craft and developing film.
Slowing down. It's like a whole new process. Yeah.
You guys know that photographer Lartigue? Are you familiar with him?
I'm not familiar with his work, no.
You might check him out. He was really something, you know. During the time when he took photographs, most of the photographs were very kind of stiff. The subjects were kind of stiff. But this is a guy who started taking photographs, I think he was about 5 years old. So they have a real capricious, fun, kind of almost snapshot quality back in those days. And one of the things I love about his photography is it really gives you a sense of what it was like to live in those times and be in that place at that time. And that's something that I aspire to in my photographs, to really give the person a feeling about, you know, what it would have been like to be there right at that time.
I also love the images that you shoot, because it's like it takes an army to create a film, but you don't get to see a lot of that army, you know?
That's right. I would, yeah.
You see their name scrolling by at the end, but not like, you know, I got this sense of this like real family feel that you guys have. I love that. I love seeing that.
Good. That's one of the things I was hoping to be gotten out of those photographs.
Cool.
Yeah, and just shifting gears just a little bit. You as a like kind of an all-round, as we said, creative dude, right? You're doing, you're acting, you're a musician, you're a photographer, and so many more things. We were curious, like, do all the different creative disciplines and things you're involved in, does one influence the other? I mean, are you a better actor because you're a musician and vice versa? Or is this all just an expression of yourself?
Well, both. I think, there was a time when I would, I'd be studying, you know, in my hotel room on location somewhere, you know, studying a scene, I would have an idea for a song or a painting or something, and I'd find myself you know, going, I thought I would be sidetracked, you know, and all of a sudden I'm making a, you know, writing a song or singing a song or something, and I'd be mad at myself, say, Jeff, come on now, you get back to what you've got to do. But I've discovered over the years that when I start to engage creatively, it sort of shakes up all of my different creative juices, and they do, like you were saying, they inform each other. I remember doing a movie with Peter Weir called Fearless, and playing a rather uptight architect who gets into this plane crash, and it changes him quite a bit. And I found myself, when I was studying, the impulse to go out and buy a lot of art supplies. So that's what I did. I went and bought a bunch of art supplies, a lot of paper and charcoal and ink, and I ended up putting those empty paper all over my wall in my hotel room, and I went to town and just started to kind of channel the character, what he would be painting like after this plane crash, and some wild stuff came out. And the next morning I had breakfast with Peter Weir, the director, and said, come up to my room and look what happened. And he came up and he said, oh, these are great. These are all going to be in the movie, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, you put them in the, you know, so they all kind of, it all kind of, they all kind of go together, all that stuff.
Yeah, and as you're, I mean, you're associated with so, like, I mean, it's hard to not bring up the Big Lebowski. I'm trying to not ask you a million questions about it. But, I mean, you're associated with so many iconic films. Like, that film, I mean, it'll live on forever. I mean, there's so many people devoted to it. Like, now, looking back at your career, like, did you know at the time, like, when you're doing these movies, are you like, this one's going to be huge? Or is it just, you just kind of do your best and hope for the best? Like,
yeah. I mean, there's so many things that have to come together for a film to be successful, both creatively and, you know, financially. I mean, from the writing of it to the, you know, casting. Casting is so important, not only the actors, but, you know, the who's the director, who's the writer, who's the producer, who are the, you know, who's the gaffer, you know, the key grip, all those, all, you know, who you gather to pull off this magic trick that you're doing together. It really, really is important. And you never know, you know, like with Lebowski, when I read the script, I was a big admirer of the Coen brothers, and I'd seen Blood Simple. I loved that film very much, and they are just real masters. You know, they make it look easy, you know, and that's so many masters, they do that. They make it look like, oh, just falling off a log, no big deal, you know. They made a wonderful film, and when it came out, I was surprised that it didn't do better. You know, it wasn't a big success when it came out at first. People didn't really kind of get it, I guess. And then it had to splash over at Europe and then splash back over here on these shores, and it kind of took off. And now, you know, this is the 20th anniversary of Lebowski is this year.
That's right.
And they still have, you know, two-day festivals that go on. Days where people dress up as the characters and all that, and it's, you know, that's wonderful. I really love that.
Yeah, I don't think like maybe a month goes by where I don't use some sort of a quote from that movie in my everyday.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You've affected me.
And the work that you've done with the Coen brothers, I mean, True Grit was something too. Where, I mean, it was almost like an entirely different movie than the John Wayne movie in terms of what you all added to that project.
Yeah.
And for you on set working on those, like, is it they call and you're like, okay, yeah, I'm on board, whatever you guys are doing? Or like, how do you guys, how does the collaboration kind of start with different directors you work with?
Yeah, well, I remember when they, I think it was Joel Coen called me about doing True Grit, and I said, why are you guys doing that? You know, with John Wayne, you know, I think he won the Academy Award for it. It's a big, famous kind of movie. Why do you guys want to remake that? And they said, well, have you read the Charles Portis novel? And I said, no, I haven't. And they said, well, read that and then get back to us and see. And let me know what you think. And I read that book, and I totally saw why they wanted to do it, because that book, it reads just like a Coen Brothers script. You know? And we stayed very close to that that book when we were making the movie. And as far as, you know, I love working with the Coen brothers, you know, I mean, and when they come inviting me to something, that's, I really, you know, prick up my ears and I'm saying, oh, God, this could be wonderful, you know. And also just one other point that came to mind is that it's wonderful to work with people that you've worked with before, that you kind of develop a shorthand and you kind of pick up where you left off. I've been very fortunate to have a fella by the name of Lloyd Catlett, who has been my stand-in for over 70 films. Can you believe it?
That's crazy.
So I have one guy who I can talk to about all those movies as we go, you know. And unlike me, he has a pretty good memory, so, you know, this way as well. But we met on the last picture show in 1970.
Wow. You guys ever just, like, get on the phone and just reminisce?
You know, it's funny. We don't hang out between films, but I, you know, work pretty steadily. So I see him, you know, all the time. And right. we reminisce a lot when we're working.
Cool.
Yeah.
Your first volume that we've been talking about with the pictures on the set, it's called Pictures. And I know you're currently working on putting out volume 2 of that. So is it like a specific time period or is it just another installment? What can we expect from that?
Yeah, it's another installment. It's picking up pretty much where I left off. I think that's how it's going to go. I'm in the process of kind of building the book now, so I don't know exactly how it'll be. I don't know. I haven't decided if there'll be any older pictures in there, but it'll probably just pick up kind of where I left off. I think around Seabiscuit, I think, was my last movie in that book, in the pictures book.
And in those... underneath those pictures, you're writing a little bit of an explanation of what we're looking at. Are you writing that while you're sort of curating the book now, or is that something that you jot down in the moment?
Usually we figure out the photographs, and then I go back and, you know, write the copy underneath to kind of take the, you know, the viewer or the reader, you know, through the book.
Yeah, it's helpful.
Yeah,
I like your handwriting too. It's got its own personality. And
both.
For folks that are gonna that did go to the website as you had suggested, they will also see that too.
One of the things that I'm another project I'm having that I'm doing is one with my daughter Isabel. She came up with a great idea for a children's book called Daddy Daughter Day. And she's writing the story, and I'm doing the drawings of it, illustrating it. And I thought, I want to handwrite. I want to, you know, in cursive. I want to write the words in cursive, you know. Mm-hmm. And for one thing, because they aren't teaching that in school anymore.
Right.
Have you heard that? You know,
yes.
That would be a shame for that to go, you know. Mm-hmm.
So are you going to?
Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm meeting with a guy, we're doing a phone, you know, meeting in a couple of days here, and I did all the handwriting, he's going to place it in, and we're going to talk about it and
That's
see
awesome.
How it goes. I'm getting that signal, you know, that where they run their, do their finger in a circle, it means time's
Wrap
up.
Wrap it up.
Yep.
Well, we really appreciate the time that you gave us. It was so great to talk with you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for doing it.
Yeah. And do you have any idea when the Pictures Volume 2 might be out?
God, you know, I really don't. My publisher has really given me some slack on that, and I appreciate it because there's a lot going on.
All right, well, we'll just stay tuned.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll put links to your website in the show notes for everybody who's listening and wants
to. Oh, be good, yeah. And let me ask you, does Kodak make 3200 anymore, 3200 ASA? That was my favorite, but it's been hard to find. I just have to use Ilford now.
Yeah, actually, we just came out with P3200 again for the first time in a long time. So, just a little bit ago, and in 35, I don't know if it's out in 120 or not yet, but it's coming back, and we're bringing back Ektachrome, which is going to be really exciting.
Good, excellent.
Film's alive.
Yep.
Right.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Right. Thank you, guys. Right. Talk to you.
Bye.
It is a great satisfaction to be able to speak to you through the medium of this wonderful invention.